Good morning, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, Finn at offbeatoregon.com, and this is the Daily Offbeat Oregon History Podcast. Thank you for loading me down and queuing me up, and I hope you enjoy the show. When you're watching a melodrama, you know right away who the villain is. That's him over there twirling that sinister handlebar mustache under a sleek silk hat and telling the pretty widow and her 9 orphan children to kiss their beloved homestead goodbye. But that's melodrama, right? And the next scene is always the one in which the hero foils the villain's evil plan. But this scene wasn't melodrama. It was real life. The widow was Mrs. Mary Jane Balch, wife of the first man hanged in the history of the state of Oregon. The homestead included much of what's now Portland's Northwest Heights neighborhood, some of the most valuable real estate in the state. And the villain, an attorney that Mrs. Balch hired to help her sell, who had craftily arranged the paperwork so he could gobble up nearly all the proceeds, the villain was none other than Oregon's very own Snidely Whiplash, future U.S. Senator John Hipple Mitchell. As a member of the U.S. Senate, Mitchell enjoyed the official title of the Honorable John H. Mitchell, but, well, that title didn't quite suit him. For one thing, John Mitchell was an alias. For another, well, perhaps I should just tell you his story. Mitchell's real name was John M. Hipple. Mitchell was his middle name. He was born in 1835 in Pennsylvania. After graduating from college, he worked as a schoolteacher there. In the mid-1850s, he got one of his students, 15-year-old Sadie Hoon, into some family-style trouble, which he then got her out of by marrying her. A few years later, the Hipples had 2 additional children, and John proved hardworking and ambitious. By 1857, he was a practicing attorney and well on his way to making a nice life for himself and his little family. And then he vanished. He took his youngest daughter and his mistress, borrowed, quote-unquote, borrowed $4,000 belonging to the law firm he was working for, which he did pay back later, by the way, and he set out across the continent to start a new life in California, leaving his wife and the other children behind and penniless. This new life must not have been much of an improvement, or perhaps it wasn't far enough away to get away from the representatives of his old law firm, who clearly were keen to get their $4,000 back. That's a little over $100,000 worth in modern money. In any case, in 1860, he did it again, abandoning the mistress there and moving to Oregon with his daughter. Now, Portland in 1860 was about as far away from anywhere as you could get without living in a log cabin and killing stuff for dinner. As other men had before him, and other men would again, he found refuge from a checkered past in this frontier city, a place to start a new life. With a new life came a new name. John Mitchell Hipple was now calling himself John Hipple Mitchell, attorney at law. It was shortly after arriving that Mitchell deftly fleeced the widow and orphans Balch, and around the same time the still married Lothario started romancing the daughter of a blacksmith in Oregon City. He subsequently married her without having bothered to first divorce Sadie Hoon, an oversight that would come back to haunt him later, but not haunt him very much. Mitchell was, by all accounts, as charismatic as he was rascally. He soon made the acquaintance of another newcomer to Oregon, the controversial and flashy Ben Holliday, the Gilded Age stagecoach and railroad magnate who rocked the Oregon establishment with his energetic take-no-prisoners approach to business, especially his Oregon and California Railroad. Mitchell became Holliday's personal attorney, which was most certainly a lucrative job, and soon he was Portland's leading railroad and timber lawyer. But where Mitchell made his big money, early on, was by a deft swindle that he pulled in 1868, which left him and a few of his friends with title to basically half of downtown Portland. It was a nifty little operation that you could call the Carruthers swindle. Before Portland was more than a clearing on the river, a woman named Elizabeth Carruthers and her son, Phineas, had taken out a 640-acre homestead claim that was just south of what had grown into downtown Portland. The property, which was clearly in the path of progress, was already skyrocketing in value. Elizabeth Carruthers considered herself a widow. Her husband had disappeared and was presumed dead, so the land claim was in her own name. Both Carruthers's subsequently died with no known heirs and no will. Mitchell and some promoter friends saw their chance. They went on a hunt for a man who answered to the name of Joe Thomas, the name of Elizabeth Carruthers's vanished husband, who would be willing, for a fee, to swear to be the Joe Thomas, the missing husband himself. They found such a man in St. Louis, and although his real name turned out to be John C. Nixon, he was willing to lie about that, which was good enough to get the job done. Nixon was brought to Portland, where he was sworn in and faithfully did his bit of perjury, and then, after receiving an $8,000 payoff for his services, he deeded the land over to Mitchell's group. Easy money. Well, by the 1870s, Mitchell knew how profitable it could be to mix business and politics. He'd gotten himself elected to the state senate in 1862, almost immediately upon arriving in the state. And 10 years later, he was able to clinch the prize he was really after, a seat in the U.S. Senate. At that point, though, he was nearly undone by a blast of karma. It had come to the attention of his political enemies that he had abandoned most of his first family in Pennsylvania and was living under an assumed name and was a bigamist. Luckily for Mitchell, if not for his adopted state, the Senate decided these things weren't deal killers and went ahead and seated him, whereupon he embarked on a 30-year run of deviousness and influence peddling and chicanery that would leave the state overall somewhat worse for wear, although he did accomplish some notable good things for the state. His efforts got Cascade Locks funded, as well as a number of Oregon's complement of life-saving lighthouses. However, Mitchell worked tirelessly to promote the interests of his clients in Washington, including Ben Holliday and later the Southern Pacific Railroad. He also never seemed to weary of trying to get the federal government to renege on treaties made with South Coast Native American tribes whose heavily timbered lands development companies coveted. But he's best known today for his part in one of the biggest land swindles of American history, and his role in that swindle would finally bring him down. In the early years of the 1900s, federal public lands in Oregon were available to individual homesteaders in 160-acre chunks for a tiny fraction of their true market value, $2.50 an acre. Large timber companies like Booth, Kelly, and Weyerhaeuser wanted to buy vast swaths of it and felt that they should be free to do so, but they weren't. So they simply made arrangements with front men, often hobos, who would file a claim on 160 acres, pay the $400 for it with company money, and sign it over to the big outfits. In the process of making these arrangements, the companies got some help from Mitchell. And when a federal investigation by Theodore Roosevelt appointee Francis Haney started looking into the matter, it was all over for the white-bearded grand old man of Oregon politics. Mitchell was convicted and sentenced to serve 6 months in prison and pay a $1,000 fine, which sounds beefy in 1903 dollars, but it's worth noting that the bribe he was convicted of taking was twice that much money. In any case, he died from a dental abscess while the case was on appeal, so he never actually served any prison time. But to this day, Mitchell is one of only 5 Senate members in U.S. history who have ever been convicted of a crime while in office. And as far as I know, he is the only U.S. Senator who has ever served in the Senate under a false name. This story was first published on October 28th of 2012 under the headline Senator John H. Mitchell, the Snidely Whiplash of Oregon. Key sources included works by E. Kimbark McCall, William Boley, and the Oregon History Project at OHS.org. Well, that's our show for today. Thanks again for listening, and I do hope you enjoyed it. This podcast is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. For more Offbeat Oregon goodies, social media links, stuff like that, check out our hub page at offbeatoregon.com. There you'll also find photos, art, and other resources that go with today's show, as well as full citations to the sources for this story. The podcast is covered under a Creative Commons license. For details of that, see offbeatoregon.com/cc. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band and was written by Carmen Ficarra. Listen and download more at atlasstringband.com. And if you're ever in the neighborhood near Oregon State University with time for a cup at Allen Brothers or a pint at McMenamin's, drop me a line. I'm at finn@offbeatoregon.com, or you can ping me on Twitter @offbeatoregon. A fresh Offbeat Oregon History podcast comes out around 6 a.m. each weekday morning, so a new one will be coming your way soon. And until it does, go fill up the rest of today with good stuff. Bye now.